Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode of Real Blend is brought to you by AMC Theaters. The Oscar race is heating up once again with the official list of nominations announced, and you can watch this year's Academy Award nominated films at the AMC Best Picture Showcase, which will feature the nominees back on the big screen from January 24th through March 12th at an AMC theater near you. Now, whether you're seeing these films for the very first time or you're catching up with them again before the big ceremony, AMC Theaters will be bringing this year's nominees back in order to be seen the way that they were intended, in a theater. And for AMC Stubs members, you can use your A-list reservations to see three of the nominees in 1 week. So grab a friend, gather the family, and head to your local AMC theaters to see this year's Best Picture nominees, including Everything Everywhere All at Once, Steven Spielberg's The Fabelmans, and of course, Top Gun Maverick. Check the link in the description of this episode and search for AMC Theaters Best Picture Showcase for more information and to buy your tickets. Hello, Blenders, and welcome to episode number 246 of Real Blend, a podcast that promises to be shorter than the Oscars ceremony. My name is Sean O'Connell, and on this week's show, Oscar nominations are here, and I'm actually kind of excited about them. I can't wait to hear how you guys feel about them. We're giving our reactions, and we're going to review the movies of the week, including, what's the one we all saw? You People. You People, starring Eddie Murphy and Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and a slew of other funny people, which we will discuss at the end of the show. By we, of course, I mean Kevin McCarthy of Fox 5 in Washington, D.C. Kev, how are you, sir?
Good afternoon, Sean, Jacob, Gabriel. Great to be on with you guys. First time, long time. Yeah.
And the other guy in blue over there is Jake Hamilton, Fox 32 in Chicago. Hello, Jakey. How are you?
I got my Tom Hanks letter.
Yes, you do.
I just want everyone to know.
That's true. Yeah, we have.
I just want everyone to know.
Yeah.
Tom Hanks loves me. Yet? Not yet. It's been a week, but it shall be framed with both the photo of all of us and the single photo that I have with him. Yeah. From
did you get some white out since it was addressed Dear Jack? Did you make the correction? No.
Hey, let's all ask Gabe what his letter says. Gabe, what did your letter from Tom Hanks say?
He doesn't send me letters anymore. We just meet once a week for coffee.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Gotcha. Makes sense. Mm-hmm.
I know you're joking, but I'm like weirdly jealous of your hypothetical lie. I'm jealous of your fake relationship with Tom Hanks.
I might have signed an NDA. I might be sworn to secrecy. I don't know.
I'm thinking about framing mine with both interview photos, even the Zoom one, because it kind of speaks to the times we're in.
Sure.
So I was probably going to do our real life.
Oh, that's interesting.
And then put the Zoom one, because the Zoom one's what led to the letters. I guess in congruence with the Elvis one. But yeah, I think I'm going to put
that's interesting
in there. Yeah.
Hey, not to go down the rail already, or off the rail, or however we're saying it.
We didn't even start on a rail, I think.
A lot of times when I'm editing stuff or working on some stuff that's kind of like mindless at Cinema Blend, I pull up YouTube and just listen to like clips in the background of, you know, other interviews or different things are going through. And I landed on a Joe Rogan clip where he was talking about the Kennedy assassination. And when all of this footage got unveiled, right? And then it went to another clip of Oliver Stone being on the Joe Rogan show. And he was also talking about things that he knew about the Kennedy assassination. And then the next clip up was Oliver Stone on our show.
Hey.
And I went, oh my God, Oliver Stone was on our show.
Yeah.
Like, I had just completely forgotten about the fact that he came on our show until we came up in the rotation.
Yeah, we did a 30 minute.
We did good.
Yeah.
We did great. I was kind of nervous. He intimidates me.
It's not that I don't find Stone to be, because I know we've all interviewed him multiple times. I don't find him to be necessarily a tough interview to conduct. I find him to be a tough interview to edit, if that makes any sense.
Oh, interesting. Just because he's windy?
He takes you on it. Like, you ask him a question and he takes you on a tour of the mind of Oliver Stone before he gets around to answering your question.
He wasn't that bad that day. He was pretty concise.
We did a JFK.
And it was
like
for
30,
JFK.
I don't think I was a part of that for some reason.
Yeah, for people out there, listen to it if you get a chance. It's like it was a show. We did it like a 30-minute breakdown of JFK. If you're a fan of that film, definitely listen to it.
Well, let me tell you where you can find that interview, guys. You can go to YouTube and search for Real Blend, Oliver Stone, JFK, if you would like to, and give it a listen, much like I did. We are over at youtube.com/RealBlendPodcast. And Gabe, by this point now, the ticker has to have crossed, right? Gabe showed me a little screen image.
Yeah, we were like, let me see if it's already. This morning, we were like 3 subscribers away from another like 1,000 milestone, like 11,000.
We're at 10,997.
I thought we just crossed 10,000 the other day.
We're at 10,999.
Oh, stop. Come on. Now, everyone listening knows how much that bothers me.
No, I've just taken the channel offline, and we're no longer eligible to be subscribed to.
We're, of course, available all the places you get audio podcasts met as well, too. But someone go and subscribe, please, if you're listening to this and you haven't yet.
I'm just going to unsubscribe so it gets you away from that number.
We'll get one more before the end of the day.
Have you signed up for Real Blend Premium? That is a place where you can get extra Real Blend episodes every Monday, as well as a newsletter every other week and an ad-free version of the show. So check the description wherever you are listening to find out where you can get Real Blend Premium for your additional Real Blend needs. All right, as mentioned at the top of the show, the Oscar nominations were revealed on what day? Tuesday.
Yeah.
The 24th.
Yeah, today's Wednesday. And we were talking about the fact that Riz Ahmed and Allison Williams did a fantastic job with which is funny to say because it doesn't seem like a complicated thing to do, but like more often than not we are critiquing the people who are doing it, and I thought they did a really great job.
There's also usually I feel like way too much pomp and circumstance to it. I love that it was basically like, here they are, come out, here are the nominees. Like I you don't need to don't show me, as someone who like, as I know Kevin was too, like gearing up to do a live hit on air about the nominees, don't hit me with like a 3-minute montage of all the movies that came out last year. Like, we know if we're watching this, we know what came out last year. Like we just tell me what's nominated.
Yeah,
you know what's funny about it too, the first category was supporting actress, so maybe we'll start there as we discuss that. And I feel like everybody was so excited by the 5 nominees in that category, especially Stephanie Soo, who, you know, when her name got nominated, everybody was applauding. And then they went to like some technical categories. And I feel like the people in the room felt like they needed to continue to applaud for every nominee that was listed. And I think that was genuine for supporting actors. And I think for everything else, they're just like, all right, now we're going to get this going, because they were clapping for all the things they're going for. So let's go to actor in a or actors in a supporting role. And here's how we're going to do this. I will read the nominees, and then you guys can tell me standouts or things that make you really happy or sad.
Here
are the 5 nominees. Or confused, yes. Here are the 5 actress in a supporting role nominees. It is Angela Bassett for Black Panther Wakanda Forever. Hong Chau, nominated for The Whale. Although I did see a lot of people saying that
The Menu,
her performance in The Menu might have helped, you know, might have also might have pushed her
tortillas
over the edge. Kerry Condon got a nomination for The Banshees of Inisherin. Jamie Lee Curtis getting her very first nomination. Is that correct?
Her first Oscar nomination. Yeah,
that's cool.
That's crazy.
She should have been nominated and won for True Lies. Her performance see, you guys laughed. Her performance in True Lies.
I only laughed not at the choice. What I was going to say was, who at home finished the sentence before?
Yeah, I was saying, I knew you loved
that movie. Because you loved that movie.
No, but in all honesty, if you actually think about how hard that performance was in terms of like, not even just the dancing sequence, but just the whole arc of her character and the adventure she wants to go on with Simon, Bill Paxton's character, to the end where she becomes an action star with him. I mean, I actually think that was a really amazing role for her. And again, it's action, so people don't think about it in terms of Oscars, just like y'all's reactions. But
because I would argue that, but I would say that if we're thinking out of the box, I think she's better in the, what year was it? The 2017 Halloween, in terms of what was required of her, in terms of and this is her favorite phrase, but
the first David Warren Green.
Yeah. I thought she was what she had to express there. I thought was more impressive.
She was great in that. Yeah. But I don't know. I think True Lies is my favorite thing she's done, but just from a grand scope of a performance, she does everything in that movie.
But well, the fifth nominee in the category is Stephanie Soo, who I want to mention is nominated for
Sue or Shu.
Is it Shu? Stephanie Shu?
I believe it's Shu.
All right. Well, I'm thrilled that she got in.
Yes,
because it she hasn't been getting nominated in a bunch of different places. And Michelle Yeoh and Just Kiho Kwan have been getting nominated. Did she? Okay. And so they get her and Jamie Lee Curtis both nominated in the same category, I think is terrific.
Yeah.
Does anyone else think Angela Bassett's not going to win this?
You know,
because I think she's got it locked
up. I think it's done. It's by no means is it just a career award.
It's very
deserved, but I also think the mentality of she should have an Oscar by now definitely also helps her case.
Sure. This, you know, speaks a lot to what Kevin is just saying, though. This is a performance in a blockbuster, essentially.
And I mean, it's the very first Marvel nominated performance ever.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And also,
and I think that a lot of performances had to overcome the stigma of being in a quote unquote Marvel movie.
Yeah. But Heath Ledger won for Dark Knight. So, you know, it's not the first one to win.
Yeah, but The Dark Knight was like, sorry to interrupt. The Dark Knight was kind of like the elevated superhero movie, the way that people talk about elevated horror. You know, that was.
Yeah, but they still didn't nominate it for Best Picture, which is one of my like.
Yeah.
Did Toni Collette get nominated for Hereditary? She did.
No, she did not.
Really?
Yeah, she did not. I actually talked with Mia Goth about that yesterday when I interviewed her for Infinity Pool about why, because I actually do think. Well, we're going to talk about Infinity Pool later, but I actually do think that she was worthy of more awards consideration than she got for her performance in Pearl. And we had a really great conversation about like why the Academy doesn't appreciate the horror genre, specifically horror. Because aside from, you know, notable exceptions like Exorcist and Sixth Sense, I mean, guys, can you guys think of like any real massive horror films that have performed well? Silence of the Lambs, I guess.
Yeah,
but that was 30 years ago. Get out's a good example. Always notable exceptions.
Yeah, and I mean, I think with the Angela Bassett thing, well, first of all, it's interesting. There are moments when you watch something where you feel such a weight of emotion behind a delivery, and I remember, and again, I'm not trying to promote my own interviews, but like when we talked to Angela Bassett for Black Panther: Wakanda Forever. And I just asked her about that line and kind of what was going through her mind. This minute and a half to 2 minute answer she gave me about the depth of history and what was going through her mind when she says, "Have I not given everything?" I just remember standing there going, first of all, we're on a carpet and you're giving me an answer that I feel like people would probably get in like a sit down, intimate like interview. Like she was really, really, really passionate about that moment. But also, it gave me a lot of insight into her strength as an actor. At the end of the day, you have a line on a page, but for her to take it that many steps further, because you feel all of that when she says it, like, you know, and I remember hearing the line in the trailer and then hearing it in the film. I was sitting next to Sean when we watched it, and there's a weight to that line and the weight to that moment that just feels. It feels extraordinary. It feels different than a lot of lines that I heard in films last year. But then on top of it, and I know the Academy is not going to watch that clip of what she said about that interview, but it is fascinating to think about how much thought process goes into something as simple as a line of dialogue. And I'm not saying I don't know. To me, that was really eye opening to her process, eye opening to how much she cares about what she does, to how much she wants to get across certain points within performances that are important to her. And I just found that to be like so admirable. It was just kind of like a huge eye opening thing for me to hear her talk like that. And I've always thought she's been amazing. She's great in Fallout. She was amazing in Fallout.
The Half Fallen films she's good in.
But I also want to bring up a point, though, too, that it's as effective as that speech is and that moment is. It's she's not winning for that scene. Like if you go back to the opening of the movie when she's addressing the UN. Yeah. And even the way he, like Ryan Coogler, paces that out where she's like calling all the other countries on their bullshit, basically, and then showing how they've been sort of coming after Wakanda and trying to get their I was gonna say adamantium. No,
resources.
Vibranium.
Unobtainium.
Yeah.
Unobtainium.
Thank you.
What's the new one called? Great. In the Way of Water. The brain juice.
The brain juice.
I don't remember. It doesn't have as bad of a name as Unobtainium.
I love it because they made that scene to point out that we're no longer going to discuss Unobtainium. There's a new a new thing.
And it's called Brain Juice.
It is now.
Let's get to actor in a supporting role. Yes, actor in a supporting role, in which case we're going to have another case of two actors from the same film, which, in my opinion, always kind of splits the vote. But then this one also is a category that I think has the winner kind of predetermined before we even go into it. So this is Brendan Gleeson, nominated for the Banshees of Inisherin. So was Barry. I thought it Keoghan. Was Barry Keoghan.
Keoghan.
It is Keoghan. All right. Why did I get chosen to read the names of the nominees? This was a bad idea for this show.
Have you heard about his story, by the way?
Oh, it's an unbelievable story.
It's I read somewhere. And I
how
don't
he
wanna,
became an actor, you mean?
Yeah. Like I want to say his parents or his mother died at a very young age. And then he was put in multiple foster homes throughout his life.
Oh, wow.
And he essentially responded to some ad for a commercial, I want to say it was. And then.
It was like a street ad somewhere.
Yeah, it was unbelievable.
Oh my God, wow.
Yeah, I cannot. His story, I don't want to botch it. Look it up. Just look up his story. There's a great clip on Twitter right now that where he talks about his history. It's amazing where he is.
Cool. Do you think Matt Reeves is punching up the Joker scenes?
Oh, hell yes. Absolutely. Yeah. You know what I love, too, is that he sent in an audition for the Riddler.
The Riddler, yeah.
Like, he wanted the Riddler part. And then Matt Reeves was just like, no, I'm going to throw you. I'll throw you the Joker instead. How about that?
Here's he's incredible in Banshees. That scene that everyone points to where he asks Kerry Condon's character out, basically, is just...
My favorite, like 1-2 punch is, like, when he's like, all the things we have in common, and she's like, we don't have anything in common. He's like, don't skip ahead.
Yeah.
Oh, the look on his face.
Sorry, Sean. Yeah. It's a great movie. I don't know what's wrong with you.
I would love... That's a scene that I would love to see him, or the two of them... with writer-director's name, excuse me.
Martin McDonagh.
The three of them just like dissecting that scene.
Yeah.
I would love to see
it. It's funny, I ran into Martin McDonagh at the Critics' Choice, and I walked up to him because my favorite line in that whole film is when Colin Farrell switches the word feck to the, you know, to F-U-C-K, because the whole time they're saying feck. And then when he says the F-U-C-K line, it just has so much weight to it because it's very different from anything you've heard so far in the film. And Martin McDonagh was like surprised that I recognized that. He was like, I'm surprised that you noticed that. I'm like, that was the most effective line in the whole film. Like, did you think people would not notice how great of, and I remember talking to people after they saw it, and some people just didn't catch it because it is such a quick little change. But to me, that's the whole arc of the character. That's the moment he just doesn't give an F anymore. And he's like, because the whole time he's trying to get Brendan Gleeson back as a friend. And I think McDonagh was like super happy that I noticed it. I mean, I don't know if he was just doing it to make me feel good or not, but it was just cool to like hear his reaction.
I've seen you say that to directors multiple times where you point out like relatively minor things and they're pretty
I did it to Scorsese one time. I was in a Critics' Choice and I brought up an edit that he had in Wolf of Wall Street. We were Critics' Choice and it's the Wolf of Wall Street year, and there's a strange edit that happens in the beginning of Wolf of Wall Street when DiCaprio's walking into Spike Jones, right? Like in the beginning of that movie, into that area where he's making the calls.
Garage.
Well, it's almost like a strip mall. And the edit edit makes no sense. And I remember I pointed it out to Scorsese and he was like, he was blown away that I noticed it. Because I don't think it was like, it's such a jarring edit, but I think maybe he hoped that nobody would notice it. I don't know. But I remember him being like freaked out that I even caught it.
I pointed out something one time to Scorsese. I was like, dude, no one else is going to get this. But in the last shot of The Departed, they show a rat.
Right.
And it's interesting because Matt Damon... was a rat. And then show a rat. Marty, and he asked me to call him Marty, was like, Marty. I can't imagine anyone else would get that. And I was like, no, it was a rat.
He gave you a special thanks on silence because of that question.
That's exactly right.
Because everyone else was silent about it.
He said, this is wild, Jake. We didn't even plan that. That rat was going through. And I had no other footage, so I had,
thank you for noticing,
had to keep it in there.
I just yelled at the operator, get that shot. It's a rat.
All right. Here are the nominees for actor in a supporting role. Brendan Gleeson, again, for The Banshees of Inisherin. Barry Keoghan for The Banshees of Inisherin. Brian Tyree Henry, surprising a lot of people, and getting in for Causeway. Judd Hirsch for The Fablemans, and then Kihoi Kwan for Everything Everywhere All at Once. Brendan Gleeson hasn't, did he pick up a bunch of noms on the way up? I thought it was a lot of Colin Farrell.
It's been him and Colin Farrell all the way. Like the constants in this category up to this point have been Gleeson, Keoghan, and Kihoi Kwan.
Kihoi Kwan. Okay.
The last two slots were sort of. Well, and then in terms of the Fableman boys, it was going back and forth between Hirsch and Dano. A lot of people I know were leaning more for Dano. But I mean, Kevin, when you and I saw Fablemans, I seem to remember both of us going, because I mean, I feel like Dano's performance is very understated. Like, I mean, if you're going to the fact that they would nominate potentially Dano for Fablemans, but not for There Will Be Blood kind of blows my mind. But like, I always thought Hirsch had the more Oscar potential. And didn't you and I sort of lean, like when his scene was over, didn't people applaud in our theater when he exited?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Like, I think, didn't you and I like in that moment, maybe I'm like remembering this.
I remember.
In our, like, we were just like, okay, there's his Oscar right there.
Yeah. Oh, I thought for sure. That scene was it played so huge.
Yeah.
We were in this major auditorium. Was it TCL Chinese?
Mm-hmm.
And it was packed. It was like the AFI Fest, and that scene just really, it was unbelievable. It was like the ending of a show and everyone was just like clapping. It was really well done.
But again, I'm going to point out that this is largely four actors who are ready to lose to Kihoi Kwan.
Yes, that's true.
I'm going to be stunned if this Oscar category goes to anybody but that. And
none of us are upset about that,
right?
I mean, that's amazing.
Not at all. He's amazing.
Deserved.
Also, if you listen to our interview with the Daniels from our show, they talk a lot about the fanny pack sequence and how that was shot in basically 1.5 days. And you start realizing how tight this film was to shoot and kind of how what they got out of their performers and their actors, and especially him, because obviously, you know, his story is incredible. I mean, the idea of, you know, going from Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom and Goonies and everything. I could be wrong on this. You know, he was working as a stunt. Like, he was working in stunts prior.
He was a stunt coordinator on the first X-Men movie.
Right.
Yeah, and there's videos of him on set.
Isn't he an Encino man?
Yes, he is an Encino man. That's why him and Fraser have like that really cool connection,
which is so cool.
This whole tour for him has been like a reunion tour. Like, the picture with him and Harrison Ford has been fantastic.
Yeah.
And Spielberg.
At one point they got Sean Astin and then Jeff, I can't think of his last name, who plays Chunk from the Goonies. They got up and presented him with one of his awards. Like,
that's just been cool.
And then, of course, like we said, like him and Fraser, you know, going back to Encino Man. Like, this has just been a terrific sort of run through the marathon and a story for him. So I dig
that's
it.
That's fantastic.
I think it's terrific. Yeah. Actress. Let's get to actress in a leading role with some really interesting choices here. So we have Cate Blanchett, who was nominated for Tar. Ana de Armas coming back and getting a nomination for Blonde. Oh, I think that is well deserved.
Yeah. She deserves that nomination. Do you have any idea how hard that performance was?
Me, dude.
Oh my god!
Wait, Jake. Movie aside, are you?
I didn't think her performance was good.
Okay,
I did not think her performance was good.
Interesting.
Oh wow! All right. Well, Andrea Riseborough got in for a film called To Leslie.
I would like to touch on that too.
Yeah, in a second. It didn't even get a U.S. It didn't get a U.S. release. That film has not been released anywhere in the States.
That was a big controversial one.
Yeah. Well, we can get to that in a second. And then the two Michelles. Michelle Williams was nominated for The Fablemans, and Michelle Yeoh was nominated for Everything Everywhere All at Once. All right, let's get to Andrea Riseborough.
Yeah.
So the story behind her nomination is that she got a number of fairly famous friends of hers to campaign behind the scenes.
Kate Winslet and Amy Adams and
Gwyneth Paltrow and Brad Pitt, from what I understand, which again,
Ed Norton,
completely
was
valid
on that list too.
Yeah, completely valid. Like, get your nomination any way that you want to get your.
But exactly, but see, that's what I don't understand. There seems to be this backlash against her that, like, oh, like you got all your famous friends to use social, but it's just like, how is that compared to a studio pouring millions of dollars into an Oscar campaign.
It's
like,
not.
How is one better? Like, honestly, I think it's more impressive that you didn't have the millions of dollars and you did this grassroots tour and, God forbid, used word of mouth to get people to watch your film. Because I don't care if it was like Kate Winslet and Amy Adams and Gwyneth Paltrow on social media. People, enough people had to watch the, like there are a lot of voting actors in the Academy.
Yeah.
And those five, six A-list people posting on Instagram doesn't get you a nomination. Getting people to watch the film and put your name down gets you a nomination. Sure. And clearly that's what happened. And I don't understand why people, at least I feel like I'm seeing people upset about that.
Well, one of the reasons I think people are upset is because of the people who got left out.
Yeah. Sure.
Like, I know Viola Davis was not a front runner ever, but like in contention.
Deadweiler should be nominated. I think Kevin has my back on that.
Oh my God. The scene in the courtroom when it's like a oneer and the way her eyes, everything about that sequence.
The What a Mother Knows sequence.
Oh. Yeah. That whole sequence is just brilliant. And again, I've said this before on the show, Till was a great film because it dealt, in my opinion, with a tragedy, but the idea of a mother and the unlimited love that she had for her child and what she was willing to do to help other people in the future. And I thought it was, her performance was absolutely incredible. She elevated that film. I do think she deserves to be in this list. And I love Viola Davis in The Woman King. Mm-hmm. But if I had to choose one or the other in terms of a nomination, I think Deadweiler, I think, should be in there. I mean, I would love to see both her and Viola Davis in there because Viola Davis, her performance is incredible because it's not even just an emotional performance. The physicality of that role was unbelievable. It's interesting. I was talking about this on the air today because those are two performances that I do believe deserve to be in that list. But then who do you remove?
Jake, you saw Two Leslie, right? You're the only one who's seen
it? Yeah, I watched it last night.
Should she be in this category? Or do you feel like
it's a very strong performance? Like she does a very good job.
What's her part?
So the premise is a woman who, when you meet her at the beginning, you already maybe sort of get the impression that like maybe she's got trouble with alcohol and she's maybe a bit of a partier and a bit of a wild and crazy woman. It begins with her on the news. She's just won the lottery. But like, it's not a massive amount. It's like 190,000. Like, I don't say that's not a massive amount, but in the scope of like when you think of the lottery, $190,000. Like not enough to where like I can just do whatever I want for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
So she finds out that she wins at a bar. So she's being interviewed by the news in front of the bar. And you hear someone say like, hey, you know, drinks on you. She's like, yeah, drinks on me. Cut to black. 6 years later, she's blown it all. She is basically homeless. She gets kicked out of a hotel and it's kind of, you're following her on this journey as she's kind of being kicked out, bounced from place to place. Like she goes to live with her son for a while. And then she goes to live with some friends for a while. And she ends up working for Marc Maron in kind of this Fleabag motel. And I mean, it's
podcast.
That's exactly right. Well, you know, it's funny. It actually kind of gave me like, because it's set in West Texas, it almost kind of gave me that slice of life Florida Project vibe, particularly when she goes to work at the motel, because Marc Maron kind of plays the Willem Dafoe part. It's a very strong performance. Like it's very strong. Is it like worthy? Like does she deserve the spot over Deadweiler? No, she does not.
Right.
But she's not, you know, even if she got the nomination, however she got it, she's not the first person in history to get a nomination over someone who deserves it more. And I think is interesting, I'm curious as to your thoughts on this, how this is going to change campaigning for Oscars moving forward. Because both studios behind Woman King and Till poured millions of dollars into their Oscar campaigns when this word of mouth grassroots tour knocked them both out, in theory. If those were the ones on the cutting room, you know, or on the chopping block, block.
But like, I don't think it's going to change the amount of money that people spend on that.
Sure, because do you think
they're going to call?
I was saying, like, do you think other actors who would like Paltrow maybe are like kind of yeah, like you know, they're starting to like, hey, start posting for me on social.
Maybe, but I think someone's that doesn't happen unless they're like genuinely friends and they're maybe like I don't know what the full story is behind that. Like, I could see a situation where she didn't get that, like, her movie didn't actually get the proper release, and so they're just trying to help this, like, really great performance. Like, I could see that. I do, you guys mentioned this, I do want to highlight this because I don't want to brush past it. A lot of the controversy, though, is it seems, and if you look at the way the Oscar or the awards have been running up, it seems like she replaced potentially two women of color in a category.
Yes.
When the Oscars is still under pressure to sort of inclusivity and diversify not only who they nominate, who they award, and all of that. So I think it's a complicated situation where I think you cannot try to be upset at Andrea Riseborough herself, but it is frustrating when you see, you know, you would say established Hollywood celebrities are the ones who came in and changed everybody's mind the last minute and took out, you know, one or two women of color from contention for an award that you know, it would mean a lot. People brought
no,
up
no, I understand that. But you know what would be interesting? If Andrea Riseborough got in and each of those other two women got in, would anybody make a big deal? Like, if she had knocked out Michelle Williams and Ana de Armas, would the controversy be as...
Well, like, no, because it's different.
Would people really be as mad for how she earned the nomination?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's not just...
Like, I'm saying she campaigned, but she didn't campaign to say, like, I'm going to knock these two out. Right. You know, you never know how the slate right. is going to fall of the five. She just campaigned for one of the five open slots.
Sure, but that's my point, is it does mean more whenever we're talking about the emphasis of diversifying these lists that they're putting together every year.
Sure.
That yes, yeah, they wouldn't be as upset because that wouldn't be the issue. But I could definitely see people still being upset, maybe not as seriously because it's not as a serious subject, if... you know, Michelle Williams or Kate Blanchett or like someone who has this like performance of the year that they're like, oh, this is deserving. Everyone thought this was deserving. It's weird that we're swapping that out. You know, it's weird that they're being taken out in as serious as you should take the award itself.
Well, that
it is different.
I want to interject just briefly to put everything in context. Like, these awards are still really silly. You know, like, I know that they can be important on a certain level. But it's not like the performances by Viola Davis and Danielle are being Deadwater. Stricken from the record. That while are you know, like, no one can go watch them ever again.
No,
but there's a boost that you get from a nomination like
play
that.
On To Leslie last night, a film that I don't know if I would have ever seen had it not been for this Out of the Blue. And you know what's a bummer about particularly Danielle Deadwyler is I truly think, and Kevin, I kind of want your thoughts on this. I just don't think enough Academy members watched the movie. That's all, because I cannot imagine anyone seeing that film.
Yeah.
And not putting her name down. So I think they looked at the subject matter. They saw what kind of film it was and thought, I'll get to it later. Or like, I just don't really want to watch that.
And what's interesting about it is the movie is actually about a mother's 100%, incredible 100%, journey. 100%. Right? Like, and the journey, like how she takes this horrible tragedy and turns it into a history changing thing that will help people. And like, and at the end of the day, like, you know, it's a tragic story, obviously, but when you watch the film and you see what her arc is, to me, like if Jake's saying that people didn't watch it all the way through, because it is such a, it's a really, really amazing, amazing arc that her character goes on, and you leave that theater feeling a mother's love like I've never felt before, like in terms of like watching it in a film and what a mother will do for her child. It's interesting because I do think Viola and Danielle should be in this category. I really do.
Who do you take out?
I would take out Michelle Williams. And I love Michelle Williams in The Fabelmans. But I think both Viola and Danielle are personally, I thought, gave stronger performances. Just me. Like, you know, Ana de Armas is, say what you want about Blonde, that performance is outstanding. And it's an incredible performance. And again, this is something we have to be truthful about. I hadn't seen To Leslie. I have not seen
Most
it yet.
It was
nominated on Tuesday. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet.
It's
so
Wednesday.
I can't speak to yesterday. It was nominated yesterday.
I'm saying, like, it's only been one day. I'm assuming you will watch it. Been one day.
Of course. And that's the thing is, so I can't speak to that nomination because I don't know the performance enough to give an opinion.
I'd be
on
curious
it.
To hear your thoughts.
But I am at the moment, I do feel that Michelle Williams, as much as I love Michelle Williams and she's great in The Fabelmans, I think that slot should have gone to either Viola or Danielle. And if I had to choose one, and I hate this because Kate Blanchett said this at the Critics' Choice when she was giving her speech.
While holding an award.
I know, but then Jake has his thoughts on that. But she basically kind of pointed out this idea of like how these award shows, you know, put people against each other. And it's crazy because one person ends up winning. And what does that mean to the other person who doesn't win? And that's the thing is like both, you know, we're talking about Danielle and Viola specifically because those are the two major names that have been coming up a lot in conversation surrounding the Oscar nominations, and very deservedly so. They should be in this conversation. So, yeah, I don't know. Until I see To Leslie, which I will watch, obviously, probably this weekend before we even dive into more Oscar talk, then I'll have a better idea because I can't imagine this category without Viola and Danielle. I just don't understand. Right. How that's and it really, setting everything aside, performances are phenomenal. Like they are just incredible performances, especially Danielle. I would be happy to live in a world where Danielle Deadwyler wins Best Actress, because I'm telling you that scene in the court is it's probably the most powerful thing besides Cate Blanchett and Tar, probably the most powerful immersive performance I've seen from an actress last year.
If you were in charge of nominating and giving the award, for you it'd be between her and Michelle Yeoh, you think? Or you would put Blanchett up there as well? Of like,
oh no, Michelle Yeoh definitely stays.
No, I'm just saying, like, for you personally, if you're saying, because you just said, like, you know, you put her up there to win.
I think Danielle's performance, listen, yeah. I love Michelle Yeoh and Everything Everywhere All at Once. Danielle Deadwyler's performance hit me harder.
Okay,
but I mean they're both amazing, and that's the thing.
Yeah, it's Everything Everywhere All at Once is a very emotional story, but it's not
sure.
It's not the bleeding heart emotion of a, you know, a mother's loss. Like that's very different. Yeah,
so, yeah, and Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Of the five, who wins this? Of the five, who's taking it?
I think Kate Blanchett.
I'm not giving out the goods just yet. I got to say,
yeah, I guess we're not. I guess we're doing that a little bit closer.
We're doing that later.
I think Kate Blanchett's comments in the Critics' Choice have cost her.
I
don't see that many people talking about it, to be honest with you. Oh, you got to keep in mind, only 18 people watch the Critics' Choice Awards.
Good point. That's a very good point. I also want to mention, though, that if Michelle Yeoh wins this category, I'm not mad.
I want Michelle Yeoh to win this category.
I voted for CCA.
Yeah, out of the five nominated, Michelle would make me the happiest of the five, even though I think it's interesting because I think Cate Blanchett's performance, I don't know. It's hard. It's always hard to say which one was better, which one was, you know, different or whatever. But Michelle was so great. I mean, I'd be happy with her. Yeah, it's hard. It's a hard one.
You know what happens is then you end up reading these anonymous ballot, you know, pieces that come out in the Hollywood Reporter.
I hate
every
those.
Season.
Those are ridiculous.
But listen, I'm saying, like, insight. Take the things that they say. They'll look at that category and they'll say, oh, Kate's been nominated so many times. She doesn't need it this time.
You know, just gave Frances McDormand our third one like 2 years ago.
Or my point might be you'll see someone in those ballots say like, oh, I didn't watch Till. That just looks too uncomfortable. You know, right. They admit to that. Like we put but so I much f- thought I feel like process they always behind find how come this person are, and how come not that person?
I'm with Jake that those always are just so obviously salacious clickbait. Is the wrong word.
The people that are willing to speak. Yes.
Yeah.
The people
you don't
that
are, think they're
that,
honest,
I mean, like, hell, that, that's like, that's like before an NFL feel? Season, like, I could find someone who would anonymously tell me that they think that the Bears are going to win the Super Bowl and then print it. It doesn't mean that there's any legitimacy to it. It means I found some random ass person who had a really like crazy ass opinion. Like you can always find. No.
They're talking to a voter.
I understand that, but I'm saying there are thousands
of voters.
That's like
you're asking a Chicago Bear.
Like, I just feel like the people who are willing to speak for these things
are not representing.
Aren't the bigger picture. Like they're always representing like.
I understand that.
It's just always so dismissive. Every time I read those, they just always seem so dismissive and smug and not like so.
Because they know what they need to sound like.
They know what they need to sound like. And I think there's too much. I mean, shoot, you want to talk about the social media era? There's just too much leeway behind anonymity that like you read those and you're like, you're saying this to sound like it's a shit show behind the scenes or like everyone, like it just always sounds crazy. And I don't think
Spielberg's that good of a director, actually.
Yeah, it just makes it sound.
That's what their voices sound like.
It always sounds
every single
a little
one.
Too.
Yeah, every single one of them.
Yeah. All right, let's get to actor. No leading
role. I couldn't even get to the All at Once.
Austin Butler getting nominated for Elvis, Colin Farrell for The Banshees of Inisherin, Brendan Fraser for The Whale, Paul Mescal for After Sun. That seemed to be the surprise. And then Bill Nye for Living.
Crazy to believe that's his first nomination ever.
Yeah.
That is kind of insane. Given his career.
You know what he should have been nominated for?
About Time.
Oh, no.
Love Actually.
I love Love Actually, but he's, About Time.
The beach scene in About Time for sure. But he's great in Love Actually. I mean, same,
both Richard Curtis, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Both Richard Curtis. About Time, Richard Curtis?
Yeah. That's
interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is largely four that we even expected. I think four. Bill Nye was in.
The fifth slot was one, the one that was up there. Everyone expected Bill Nye.
See, I thought Paul was going to get in.
Did you?
Yeah, because I remember reading a lot online. I mean, I think everyone's talking about Tom Cruise and whether or not he should have been nominated here. And listen, Tom Cruise has been nominated for three Oscars for three, in my opinion, better performances. I love Top Gun Maverick. He's great in Top Gun Maverick. But Jerry Maguire, Magnolia, and then I think the one he should have won for, Born on the 4th of July. You know, he's an extraordinary actor. As much as I love him in this movie, I would love to have seen Tom Cruise get nominated. It would have been cool. He's very good in the film. He carries that film. Honestly, I could see the nomination and the clip would have been the Val Kilmer scene because he carries that scene beautifully.
That would have been wonderful.
So it's interesting. I thought he should have gotten in, but then at the same time, he's also been nominated for other performances that I think are better. But, you know, this is an interesting category right now because Fraser won the Critics' Choice. Austin won the Golden Globe. Farrell also won a Golden Globe, but in the musical comedy category, which is then you start to deal with this idea of split votes because Fraser and Butler seem to be the front runners and Farrell could be the outlier. And then what's interesting about the Oscars to me, and especially with this category, Jake brings this up a lot, is how powerful a good speech can be. And Fraser's speech at the Critics' Choice went viral. And that it was a lot of people in that room who vote for the Oscars that were probably very moved. I myself was in that room and I'm not voting for the Oscars, but it was a very, very, you could hear a pin drop. It was like an incredible moment to be there having him give that speech. It was like he was giving the speech as if he would never be back up on a stage again to say thank you for winning an award. Like he gave it his all in that moment. I really do. Yeah.
Let's honestly look at those five actors, though, and tell me who gave the best performance of the five.
Fraser. No question.
Because I think it's Brendan Fraser.
No question. It's not even a question.
I'm not even saying it to put down the other ones. I think they all gave terrific performances, but I think Fraser was on another level.
Butler is unbelievable in the film, but Fraser's performance hit me on a level of catharsis that I can't even explain. It was so profound. That film was incredibly moving. I'm shocked it didn't. I wish it would have got Best Picture nomination. I know people don't really love The Whale, unfortunately, which is weird.
That it fell off.
Yeah.
You know, because it did lose momentum.
It's strange. It's really strange because I think, again, there's a lot of opinion pieces out there. We've discussed this in the show a lot. I don't agree with the opinion pieces.
Hong Chau got a nomination, which was good. That would
make me happy.
And she's amazing in it. And she's phenomenal. I mean, she's probably a massive reason why Fraser's so good in the film because she's such an integral part of that film. And then when the turn hits,
I think Sadie Sink too. I think the two of them are really important to his performance.
Is it Ty Simpkins who plays the kid from who comes over to
the church?
Yes,
from the church. Is that Ty?
I believe so.
Okay, he's great in the film too. I mean, I wasn't expecting Samantha an Oscar Morton. Nomination. Yes, Samantha Morton. Oh my god!
Also, I think it's too small of a scene, but her scene from She Said, I thought was flawless.
Really, She Said great. Is another film that I cannot believe.
Yeah,
we'll get into Nope and stuff like that too. But there's a lot of great.
It goes to show that like it was a good year last year.
It was a great.
It was a good year. Yeah,
it was a good year.
Yeah,
but I do think Fraser and if one more person tells me, oh, it's just Brendan Fraser in a heavy suit. Like I just can't deal with people who want to talk like that. Like I that is an emotional, incredible, profound performance. And if you're stuck on the prosthetics and the different aspects of, you know, the way he looked. That was the whole point of the film, was for you to look past that and actually see the individual, a teacher, a husband, a person, and not just an obese individual. And he says this a lot when he talks about the film. We walk by people all the time who are obese, and a lot of thought processes that go through people's minds, that's the first thing you notice, right? Because yeah. It's a visual thing, and you don't even stop to think sometimes that person is a person, a husband, a father, whatever. And that's kind of, to me, what Aronofsky and Hunter and everybody was kind of saying with the film. But Fraser, the last scene in that film, when that door opens with the light and everything, it's just,
about such a human film from Aronofsky, who,
yeah,
as much as he's my boy, you know, doesn't seem to give these emotional, uplifting and human stories. You know, this is a departure for him that and he just got, I mean, overlooked, not even in the conversation.
It's funny. I almost feel like it's the antithesis to an Aronofsky film, because I feel like so many of his movies are about, present us with people who we perceive as, you know, normal human beings that transform into a different version of a quote unquote monster. And I feel like this one goes the reverse, where like presents someone who audiences immediately look at and go, oh, that's some kind of a monster. And it progresses. And by the end, you realize, no, this is a living, breathing human being.
You know what? I think after Mother, maybe the dude had to be like, I better,
I gotta scale it back.
I better 180. I got a 180 from this.
I'm still dealing with elements of emotion from Requiem for a Dream. I saw it when I was 16. Yeah. That movie destroyed me. Like, it was like that. I mean, but I'm telling you right now.
Go down the list. Black Swan, The Wrestler. I mean, dude is devastating.
The montage at the end.
The living actor.
Fountain's so great. The montage at the end of Requiem, though, when we're getting all four of their arcs.
Oh,
that will remain in my mind forever. Like, I will never forget.
Who is the most heartbreaking? Is it Ellen? I think Ellen has the worst.
Connolly's moment is Marlon Wayans's moment is brutal. Like, it's a film.
Almost like he's the greatest director that we have going. Right?
And yet he's not.
And speaking of, let's get the director category, because this is interesting. This is an interesting list. And again, most of these categories that we're bringing up, while the nominees are not bad, it's often about who didn't get in, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's we're quite often bringing up the names that aren't there. For the director nominations, it's Martin McDonagh for The Banshees of Inisherin, Daniel Kwan and Daniel Scheinert for Everything Everywhere All at Once, The Fabelmans for Steven Spielberg, Todd Field gets in for Tar, and then Ruben Ostlund gets in for Triangle of Sadness,
which I did not love.
Oh, I legitimately think it's bad.
I do not like Triangle Sadness.
Like that movie at all. I didn't like it at all.
Like I thought, watched The Menu and then was like, okay, that's more along the lines of like what I wanted Triangle of Sadness to be.
Oh my God.
Like a takedown.
I will give it credit that from where that movie starts to where it ends.
Sure.
I would never have been.
But like 30 minutes in, I was like, wait, are we still arguing about who's going to pay the check? Like, are we still? And then it's legitimately, what is it? It's almost clocks into 3 hours.
3 hours.
It's like 45, 50 minutes before they get on the boat. It's like, it is a slog.
I'm just having.
All I seem to remember is Woody Harrelson and that dude in the captain's chamber with the microphone. Like, I don't know. Yeah.
One of the things I find really interesting about this category is, and again, Avatar: The Way of Water doesn't, you know, need to be the greatest movie of all time, but in terms of directing, I mean, how do you not nominate him for that?
Do you think it's because they looked at it and went, well, you just did a better version of what we've already nominated you for before?
Well, I mean,
whether it's fair or not, do you think that that's their reasoning?
Sure. I mean, it could be, but if you actually step back and think about what Cameron did creating that whole world, the language, and then directing sequences with actors that are in suits that are eventually going to be thrown into completely CGI environments of CGI versions of themselves. He has the entire thing in his head. Mm-hmm. The entire thing is in his mind. Like, he knows exactly what he's doing as he's on a stage walking Zoe Saldana and Sam Worthington through a, you know, I don't know, with dots all over their bodies. And then eventually that becomes a scene that's so emotional and resonates so much with an audience. And for the director, for Cameron to like know what he's doing in that moment, what this is going to look like, how this is going to play. Well, I mean, that to me is, and we talk about directing a lot and what directing means, and you know, whether or not, you know, people think it's visual or emotional or the way they communicate with an actor. At the end of the day, especially in the behind the scenes footage of Way of Water, you see Cameron just so much in there. And like telling them what to do. I mean, those actors are so reliant on what he's telling them because they are not seeing what the actual scene looks like rather than pre-viz or earlier rehearsal footage. But I just that to me is interesting. Like that to me is a directed film. And like that is a best director nominee right there. And I'm not saying he should win, but
it might be because. Well, studio maybe just didn't have enough time to spin the amount of stories to educate voters, right?
They, you know, they needed to do put out those side by side videos when Andy Serkis was coming up and like doing the Apes films. I'm not saying he wasn't like already famous by that point, but when he became a star kind of in those films with Gollum and Smeagol and Lord of the Rings. I mean, that was kind of the early era of motion capture and performance capture. But when they started doing this stuff with War for the Planet of the Apes and Rise and Dawn, they would release these amazing side-by-side videos of him on set filming as Caesar and then the actual finished product, or they would like wipe to the finished product. I really think, and again, I don't know if this would have helped, but Disney should have put out some type of like explanation. I know they released some behind-the-scenes footage, but just to maybe like do a whole scene of maybe like a 2-minute scene, release it online. The footage they shot and then what the ending product was, have Cameron in the footage and then give us the wipe to the real thing. And you can't tell me that wouldn't blow people's minds. I don't know. I want
directors to nominate in this category. So you would assume that directors should know.
Yeah.
You know, this I isn't like an across like, the board.
It's James Cameron. We nominated him for the first one. We gave it to him for Titanic. Like he doesn't really I don't think they didn't vote for him because they didn't think that he directed the shit out of Avatar. I think they just sort of went like, well, it's James Cameron.
But do they also think, if they're looking at a list and they're trying to whittle down their list, do they also go, well, he's going to make 3 to 6 more of these?
And I hate that. I guess,
but then again, they also nominated Peter Jackson for every single Lord of the Rings.
Did he get all
20 years ago?
He got all three.
No, yeah, I think he was only nominated for the first one in this. I don't think he was nominated for Towers.
Bet you $10.
Was he nominated? The picture was nominated for Towers, but not
he director. Won for Return, right?
Bet you $10.
I'm looking at it right now.
He wasn't nominated for director?
I'll take $10.
Wait, he wasn't nominated for director?
Not for Two Towers. He won for Return of the King, and he was nominated for Fellowship.
How do you not nominate Helm's Deep?
See? Well, that's what I'm, This is kind of Gabe's point, then. Maybe
they didn't give it to him until the third one.
Sure.
Famously.
But that's interesting, because that then kind of proves Gabe's point about...
Maybe, but again, this was 20 years ago. I don't know that we can...
But Two Towers was extraordinary. How do you not nominate him for that?
To equate the Academy 20 years
ago.
Let's get to the nominees in the category.
I have to know, real quick, can I ask who was nominated the year he didn't get nominated for Two Towers? Just real fast.
Because
2003 Oscars.
Yep.
What did
while they're doing that?
Yeah,
Jake, well, hang on, who's going to win Best Director? I have it right here.
God damn it, Gabe! I'm trying to keep the show on the rails.
Right? Well, then it's all split up.
Yeah, who was nominated for Best Director the year of Two Towers?
Pedro Almodovar for Talk to Her, Stephen Daldry for The Hours, Martin Scorsese for Gangs of New York, Rob Marshall for Chicago,
and then Polanski.
Polanski won for The Pianist.
Wow.
I mean, of those it's five, give it to Scorsese.
Yeah.
It's kind of wild to go back and look at the categories and think about like
wild.
Who you know, got Sean, in it is why wild. They got in. It's all, we should do a show where we go back and look at the categories.
We've never done 2002 films and
we should do 2003
that
Oscars.
We've never done that category because that's
interesting.
We've done that.
Really?
Wow. I think so.
I owe Gabe $10. You two owe me steak dinners, but I owe Gabe $10.
I am blown away by that. That is wild to me. I mean, could you imagine that Oscars happening today and that winner winning
that's
today?
That's my point. Yeah, that's my point. Like you go back 10, 20 years.
Wow.
And it's, you know, because so much of this is in the right now. and what campaign is working and what isn't. And wow. Then you go back and look at the actual films and what stands the test of time. Who said this? Matt Damon? Did Matt Damon say it should be given out 5 years this. Later?
Matt Damon. Yeah.
10 years later, we should go back.
It's kind of genius.
That's because I saw a story today about Spielberg where he said if Dark Knight came out last year, it would have been nominated for Best Picture.
Maybe. Yeah.
It's interesting.
But it wasn't.
Yeah. The Reader.
So that's where we're stuck. Unfortunately.
I don't know. The Batman wasn't nominated. It's pretty damn good.
The fact that Batman missed in both cinematography and score.
I love that.
Like Giacchino's score wasn't even shortlisted or whatever. Like that's.
It's more of a character than most of the characters in the movie. It's
unbelievable.
I do think that S.S. Rajamouli deserved director nomination as well as a picture nomination for RRR. Mm. And again, we can get into a whole debate about what we take out, what we put in. But S.S. and Cameron's direction on those films. And if you think about the scope, they shot for 300 days in RRR. I can't imagine that not being considered.
You know what's crazy?
It's unbelievable.
I get a little bit. I thought that movie was going to make into Best Picture because of the amount of love that it had. And so maybe it doesn't crack the five directors. But the fact that it only got song, like one nomination and it's song. Even if you watch that movie, like the visuals, the production value, like all of it's through the roof.
But also,
and the fact that they only went with the song.
Yeah. And James Cameron watched it twice. There's a video online of James Cameron just basically like fanboying all over SS about that movie. You have arguably one of the greatest directors of all time.
You think for him that feels better than an Oscar?
Oh yeah. I really like that means more.
That's gotta be easy for me to say, but
for him to meet Spielberg and then for him to meet Cameron and for Cameron to say, my wife and I basically watched your film twice and he was like asking him about shooting it. That's got honestly, that is better than an Oscar.
Let me ask a question.
Yeah.
Hold on, let me ask a question. Back onto the best director of this year. Does Spielberg have a shot? Jake.
I think the Fablemans performed well enough to keep it in the running. It's going to be hard to convince me that it's not the Daniels to take.
Yeah.
But the Fablemans getting screenplay, director, picture, two acting noms.
But no editing.
But missing editing and missing cinematography hurts.
Yeah, the editing one is.
Usually at least got to get nominated for editing. Look at the history. Big. Yeah.
Right. Because what's the history on that, Jake? I can't remember the statistic, but usually.
I think there's one film that won picture without editing. I think only one film or something like that.
It's something very minimal. Mm-hmm. Generally speaking, you get because Everything Everywhere All at Once got editing. Did I read somewhere that Everything Everywhere All at Once? Did I read somewhere because they'll win that and then they'll win picture and probably director? But I read somewhere that one of the awards that Everything Everywhere All at Once was nominated for was not actually shortlisted. And I was trying to figure out what the deal was.
I didn't know you could be nominated if you weren't shortlisted.
That's what I was trying to figure out. I need to double check that. I could be wrong, but I remember reading that somewhere.
Because also keep in mind, there are also BAFTA shortlists too. So that there are a couple of different shortlists going on at one time. Wait, did the Daniels edit? They didn't edit it. The film themselves.
For editing, best achievement in film editing was Paul Rogers.
Yeah. Okay.
I remember they called out their editors when they were.
I got them here in Chicago in March of 2022, and one of the first things I said was like, I don't see how this doesn't get nominated. Like, and this was even before people were seeing the film, and never at that point in a million years did I ever think I was talking about a film that would go on to be nominated for 11 Oscars. But in the back of my mind, I at least thought, this has got to be in contention for an editing Oscar. Like, how do you not give that the editing Oscar?
Oh,
especially that one continuity. Montage of all her, of all the different Michelle Yeohs from all the different universes. Like that editing alone, that should be the clip at the Oscars for editing. It's just all those different versions of her.
I mean, if you watch any 5 minute chunk of that movie, like the editing inside of it is going to be better than what you've seen in most films released last year.
I think if I'm Universal, what I do to push the Spielberg narrative back into the forefront is you start showing clips of his classic films, particularly the ones that contain themes that were touched on in Fablemans, and you remind voters about the classic Spielberg films that that they know and love, that like pull on the heartstrings, twinge the nostalgia, and they cut to clips of the Fablemans that are reflections of, because this happened to him as a child, he made the movies that defined your childhood. And I think when you connect those two, that's a good way to get back in.
Here's my hot take on this category that's maybe a little uninformed.
Spicy?
Maybe just a little uninformed, maybe, you know, outside perspective. To me, this feels like the sort of thing where the aging academy, the old academy, is going to think that the Daniels nomination is the win for those young whippersnapper filmmakers.
And are there producers where if they win picture, they'll get the Oscar?
Or something like, yes, they are. Where that's their, oh, we're going to give it to these young directors here, but they want to see Steven Spielberg on the stage for a movie
at least one more time.
Making movies.
Yeah. There is an interesting narrative. I mean,
which I don't totally disagree with. Like, yeah. I
wouldn't be mad if I saw Spielberg up on stage holding an Oscar.
I think that's the narrative that I think would be put out of if the Daniels don't win, is the nomination was the win for them. They're going to, you know, they're young, they'll have a chance later or whatever people say. And for Spielberg, he's someone that a majority of the Academy or the older members of the Academy want to see on stage again, in particular for a movie about the legend of Steven Spielberg.
Sure.
But why not argue? Okay. The second point, but like, he was nominated last year for West Side Story. Why didn't they get him for that? You know, like he's had shots.
Honestly, he deserved it more for West Side Story, if I'm being honest. I gotta be honest though. Under the umbrella of the Fablemans, if I could see one person up there holding an Oscar, it's John Williams. If we're talking about like, we just want to see someone on stage holding an Oscar, whether they deserve it or not.
With all due respect, my friend, score's not that good.
And there's only like 20, my understanding is there's only like 25, 30 minutes of original music in the film, but the man's been nominated for 53 Academy Awards. Give him another Oscar.
I mean, he essentially ripped that score off in a Gus Van Sant. Jesus, Stephen, I'm busy.
Jesus, I'm still. I'm doing indie.
Here's a few notes.
Yeah. He's like, "What do you got for indie?" And he's like, "Do."
For how many years now do you think John Williams, like, they give him a script? They don't even give him a script. He just tells him, like, "This is the story. These are the characters. This is the tone of the movie." He's got a legal pad and he just writes down some music notes in an order. And he sends it back to Steve and he says, "Here, just find an orchestra, play that."
And then every time Steve doubts them, John Williams just looks at him and goes, "Jaws."
Jaws.
Yeah, right, exactly. All right, let's get the picture. So we think the Daniels, well, we're going to do predictions later. I keep doing that. I'm sorry.
Right, remember, here's one thing that's important to note is the Oscars aren't until March
12th. Yeah, March 12th. So
we got some time.
Oh, dear Lord.
We got some time.
I don't know the exact.
We'll be into our second third of 2023 by the time we get to the Oscars.
Well, that's the thing is you have to think about that because
that'll be the first third.
The second quarter.
Jesus.
But the more time that goes by, the more things can change.
Yeah, I mean, remember this time last year, no one was talking about Coda that much.
Yeah.
You know what's crazy is that by the time we get to March 12th,
we're going to be so sick of it.
No, we're going to care.
Why aren't they in February? Come on. Just after the Super Bowl, Daenerys.
Have them 2 weeks from now. Yes. Yeah. Why?
Oh, wait. Did you guys see that? This is going to, Gabe, you're about to lose your fucking mind, dude.
All right, I'm sitting down.
The exact same night, the Oscars and the Last of Us finale.
Ooh,
oh, wow. Yeah, I saw that.
I guess I'll catch the Oscar highlights.
I'll catch the Oscars on Monday.
Yeah, I don't. It's,
well, that's a hard one, actually.
It honestly really is.
I'm all in on Last of Us.
Now I kind of wish HBO had commercials so I could switch back and forth.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Here are your nominees for picture. And it's worth pointing out that they went with all 10. Of the available slots.
Well, I think last two years they've been saying we're going to fill the all 10 slots.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
Oh,
that's Is it weird? Okay. Sorry, I'm interrupting right before we even start here, and I'm supposed to be in charge of keeping us on the rails. Is it weird to have 10 picture nominees and only 5 director nominees?
That's why I've been saying that the five director nominees are kind of, in my mind, the five real best picture nominees.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how often there's a split.
I kind of wish we would go back to the five Best Picture nominees.
I think there's there's a literal non-zero chance, but I feel like Top Gun Maverick, by the time we get to March, could be the Best Picture.
I'm starting to get that swelling. In terms
it
of
did
like,
get that screenplay nomination.
Yeah.
I would be taking it.
Did it get editing?
It got editing. I would take it a lot more seriously if it landed actor and cinematography.
See,
because you think of it in terms, you think of like nominations. I never really thought it was going to get director, to be honest with you. But if it had walked away with
over Triangle of Sadness,
I mean, and also like he did get DGA and WGA just came out and nominated Top Gun. So like it wasn't a fluke it getting in for the Oscar, but why are you
screaming at us?
Because I'm very excited about this. But I feel when you think of like the nominations as like a package, I just feel like it would be a more attractive package. If
right here, buddy.
I gotta stop saying attractive package. It would be a more attractive package if it included actor and cinematography.
But honestly, think about how, I mean, again, as much as I want everything, I think Everything Ever All at Once is a better film personally.
So cool if that wins.
But Top Gun won, I'd actually be happy to get a big blockbuster to win. I mean, I don't, again, that movie, I love that film, but there are things in it that I think could have been done better, but that's just another time, another place. But yeah, that would be cool. That would be really cool.
And that's where this whole like preferential ballot comes into play and becomes important.
How do you think the older voters factor into
Top Gun? Sean, will you read the list? We haven't even read the list for a picture. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. Now I'll get us back on the rails.
Yeah. By the way, the irony of Gabe getting us off. The rails. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Here are your 10. All Quiet on the Western Front, Avatar, The Way of Water, The Banshees of Inisherin, Elvis, Everything Everywhere All at Once, The Fabelmans, Tar, Top Gun Maverick, Triangle of Sadness, and Women Talking. When we jumped from Fabelmans to Tar, my brain automatically started trying to do alphabetically what movies. I was like, we went from F to T.
Oh my God.
A lot of movies are there because they announced them and they're alphabetical. I have not seen All Quiet on the Western Front. I guess that's the first one I'm going to have to try to catch up on. I'm glad to say I'm in a way that I haven't been in a really long time. I am happy with the 10 movies that are represented.
It's a nice mix.
I saw a list comparing last year's and this year's, and this year's just seems so much better. Also, one thing I love about this year's list, I said this on the air, a lot of the films in this list, people actually went out and saw. Yeah. Avatar made obviously $2 billion. Top Gun made $1.5 billion. Elvis made, I think, over $200 or $300. I'll have to look double check. It was over $100 million for sure. Everything Everywhere All at Once made over $100 million. I mean, you're talking about like at least four. I have to go through the whole list again to see.
Wait,
what
did I leave out? Did I leave out Women Talking? Did I say Women?
No, you said it.
Oh, okay. I'm just making sure.
But I mean, for four or five out of the 10 to be films that really did well, two of them are in the billions and that's cool. I thought that was a really cool thing to see. And so it kind of gave me, cause we talk about this all the time on the show. Like, I mean, sure. We've seen Mad Max nominated. We've seen action films and films and other genres nominated, but it is rare and sometimes hard to find massive blockbusters that translate to picture like this. And you know, obviously Black Panther was a great one that did it. But yeah, I thought it was cool to see some larger films. And I think, you know, hopefully we're leaning more towards in a direction where we'll get more things like that and more people will be able to recognize the talent. I mean, wait, am I wrong on this? Did Top Gun not get cinematography?
It did not.
That makes
weirdly enough,
no
it got
sense.
Special effects, but not cinematography. Yeah.
Okay, so let me explain why all right. So Sean mentioned this in the text. So visual effects does not mean CGI. I mean, CGI is part of visual effects, but visual effects mean the practical aspects of filmmaking as well. And so I think we think visual, we think CG, we think Avatar, but the production design and kind of what goes into a physical practical sequence like in Top Gun, that it's very, very hard to do. And I think that's where the visual effects are added in. I mean, also, Top Gun did have some amazing visual effects. I mean,
I'm not knocking the fact they got, but the fact that it got that, but not
over cinematography.
Cinematography is what is what blows my mind.
Cinematography doesn't make any sense because it was revolutionary. I mean, they created these like six IMAX quality small cameras that fit into the cockpit of these F-18s that were being run by the actors, that the actors then were basically the cinematographers checking their own light, making sure the sun was hitting them right, staying in character, not passing out, delivering their lines and getting the shot right. It's unbelievable.
But this is another reason why that cinematography nod is kind of silly, is because these are the nominees for cinematography. And I know that we're going to, you know, we weren't planning on doing this, but All Quiet on the Western Front, James Friend, Darius Kanji got in for Bardo, False Chronicle of a Handful of Truths. That is a beautiful movie.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Mandy Walker got in for Elvis. Yeah, I think I'd put Top Gun ahead of it. Roger Deakins gets in for Empire of Light. Love my boy. Not his best work.
No,
not the most outstanding. Claudio work Miranda by
deserves. I think Lena Sandgren deserves to be in this list. Who'd shot Babylon?
Florian Hofmeister gets in for Tar, and I think
Tar is amazing.
Relatively,
shot.
You think so?
Oh,
I thought it was. I'm not going to say like monotone, but like I'd have
that
to go
back
and pay attention to.
It was the bleakness. Like if you watch Social Network, like what makes that cinematography so great is the tonal aspect of it, the bleakness of it, the colors of the school, and Tar kind of reminded me of an atmospheric type of cinematography, if that makes sense. Okay. I think Lena Sandgren, the work he did on Babylon was genius. And first of all, we haven't even dived in. We haven't even talked about Nope yet. And I know, wax poetic about
that. We're getting into
that.
Our snubs now. We can actually transition into the disappointments that we ran into.
One of the things I really want to point out is this. I love Nope. It's my favorite movie of last year. But I also understand why people may not have loved it. I get it. But to not even consider a technical aspect of that film, not even mention it in any single category, is insane. And also, I saw a tweet, and I don't know who to give credit to for this, but they pointed out something so brilliant. Nope is literally about the industry forgetting aspects of our history and of the history of movies and the things that have happened, especially with, in Nope particularly, the history of the first movie ever made and people not knowing the name of the first stunt actor performer ever to be put on motion picture. We know who directed it. We don't know the person who is riding that horse. And all these years later, for a film to come out in a fictional way and give a legacy to that, and also talk about the idea of how the industry operates, how, you know, the world exploits tragedy. But then thematically, that's just thematics. Cinematography wise, the day for night sequences are some of the most incredible shots I've ever seen. To look at that movie and go, that's not a cinematography nomination, makes no sense. Sound design. I wish every Oscar voter would actually sit down and rewatch that film. Just go watch the scene when Daniel Kaluuya goes outside in the beginning when Kiki's in the house. She turns the music on and listen to the sound design from that point of view to all the way down to Steven Yeun's area down below in the whatever you want to call that little, that what was the name of the land? I don't even remember now off the top of my head. But I've seen that movie 10 times. I can't remember the name of it. But the sound design in that film, it was to me, I'd never heard sound design done like that. It was so unique and interesting. And then Michael Abel's score. These are just things that are, it's not even, I don't even know if it's an opinion, like factually, these things were unbelievably well done. Like they were, no,
that's the
I know
thing.
It sounds,
that, no,
it
no,
sounds
no, you're
weird
very much
to
an
say
opinion.
That, but
it's very much an opinion.
It's like saying like, how can I explain it?
It's the difference between being good in the sense that you like it, but you have to recognize that it is so incredibly well made.
Right. The artistry.
If you don't love whatever about it, a movie that is that original and that well made to not get recognized is insane.
Right. And I'm going to
point out something that is in between Kevin and I, because he loves it and I didn't. I liked it, but I didn't love it that much. I'm actually going to give you credit for this, Kevin, because I think the movie is kind of ahead of the audience.
Yeah,
it is.
I think people just don't really get it right now, because I don't fully get it. So I haven't really embraced it yet. And I'm probably going to watch it a bunch more times, and I'm probably going to warm up to it And maybe one day it'll click with me the way that it has with you. I don't think it clicked with people that way.
I just don't think
they saw it that as a pedigreed movie kind of
when
thing.
I talk to people, and it's interesting you say that, because when I have if I take 5 minutes and someone will give me 5 minutes of their time and I break down the thematics of the film for them.
At no point in your life have you ever only taken 5 minutes to talk about Nope. I refuse to believe that.
But in all honesty, when I have done this, every single time the person's reaction was, oh my God, how did I not grasp that? I need to go back now because now that sounds amazing. And I think Nope, Jake and I saw it for the first time. The first viewing of that film is very surface level.
Everyone appeals movies is that way. Like, why are people not prepared with Peele? Like, don't pigeonhole them into whatever Get Out was for you, because I think that was a part of us that people that responded negatively to it is they were expecting too much to be exactly what Get Out was.
Sure.
But every film that he's made now has been, oh, you saw it and you enjoyed it or whatever, but know that this is a 2 or 3 time in, you're gonna be revealing things that you didn't know.
Right. So, and also,
that's frustrating for me.
What's interesting to me about Nope, you know, outside of the idea that it's kind of a sequel to the first movie ever made. I mean, if you think about the concept of there's a shot in Nope where Daniel's riding the horse, which is literally shot exactly pretty much like the classic clip that they talk about in the beginning of the film with the horse. And I think like the there's a legacy aspect to that film that is truly brilliant, but also it's saying so much about the industry that I think I saw someone tweet this, that like, I think it just is the irony of it not being nominated for anything is interesting, because he's literally exposing so much about the history of movies and life and the way we exploit tragedy and just the what we find important and the beautiful message about digital versus film. I mean, I get it. I've talked about this movie a million times and I'm sure people are tired of hearing about it, but put all that aside and your opinion on the film. But the point I'm making is, from a technical aspect, to leave that movie out of any single category, I just think is ridiculous and actually sounds uninformed to me. It actually sounds like people didn't even watch it, because doesn't make sense.
If the majority of the people, which we'd have to assume because the voters voted and it didn't make any category.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to make the argument that it's an elite film if the entire industry ignored it in every category. You can't say that they're wrong, and I'm not saying that they're right either, but if it didn't break through with the voting members to make it into any category, then I think it's hard to argue
neither
that
it's Hubie.
Well, that's a good point.
It's all opinion.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think Gabe understands what I'm saying. Like, when I say it's factual, that the technical aspects of that film are just so well done. Like, you can't, I don't know. I don't know. I don't really know what else to say about it anymore. I just find it fascinating.
You know what they say about opinions? Opinions are like letters from Tom Hanks. We all have one.
We all have one. Well, not all of us. Jakey, any snubs that stand out to you?
I mean, honestly,
Kiki Palmer. I'm sorry. She deserved to be nominated, too.
It's not so much a snub as it is. I really wish Sony had realized what they had with Otto and had, because I really do think if they'd realized the potential of what they had and the fact that, like, I mean, talk about a movie that hit the box office right at the right time. You know, it started taking off right when people started voting. I think if they'd recognized how good Tom's performance was in that, and maybe it started campaigning a little bit more, it really didn't feel like they thought it had much of a shot for any of that. And I feel like there really was a missed opportunity there. And I really do think he could have been the fifth slot if they had taken advantage of it. I kind of felt like they were caught by surprise with the positive reaction that they got from both critics and audiences. And I think there's a real missed opportunity there.
And I'll use Sony just as an example, because I think every studio does this. They put their eggs into certain baskets.
Sure.
And at a certain point in the campaign, Sony was very bullish on The Woman King. And then at one point, they weren't sure if they had to put all their support behind Devotion. That almost when they realized that Otto was a player, that it was too late. You know, it was almost too late. And I think all the studios fall victim of that. It doesn't happen so much with the A24s and the Focuses that might only have one or two movies to get behind and strongly push. But with the majors, they don't necessarily know. Like when we were talking to Elvis in the summertime, you know, I don't think any of us really thought it was going to be a huge, we thought it had the possibility.
Yeah. And you know, I think we all thought, but, like, I think the conversation that I remember having was, does Butler get in? Like, does Butler get into the actor? Like, I never,
because we're used to the musical biopic actor 100%. Making the cut kind of thing.
Sure, sure. But Baz is another one who, you know, for that movie to not get in for direction, you know, like,
he didn't get in for direction for Moulin Rouge either.
I will say this about Elvis. Elvis is really well shot. And I would argue directed, but the editing on that film, I have a problem with. And I read something the other day, like they don't stay on shots long enough. It's almost like someone tweeted this.
But you love Bohemian Rhapsody.
I love Bohemian. Well, I thought the Live Aid performance was shot incredibly well.
But the editing in Bohemian is like shot.
That one terrible talking scene.
No, the whole movie.
It's a really bad scene.
The whole movie.
But one thing I saw someone say this the other day, and it actually I remember feeling this watching the film, but I never really put it into words. But like there were so many moments in Elvis that they could have stayed on Austin a little bit longer and just kind of let the scene breathe. And I get Baz's frenetic energy and what he's going for. I get it. It's a style. I'm all in. I love Baz Luhrmann. I loved Elvis. Elvis was great. I do not see Baz Luhrmann as top five best directors of last year. I just don't. I think it's a stylized, highly stylized film, but Butler to me, he's the overarching. He makes that film work because it is a little, I think, at least in the beginning, a little messy.
The live performances are pretty great.
They're amazing.
He captures the chaos that came with Elvis performing live.
I just wanted it to breathe a little bit. And I know that's not Baz's style. I just think that he could benefit from some breathing in some of these scenes. Then you got films, not to bring up Nope again, but like great moments of just really good, strong dialogue, like she said. And, you know, there's so many things where you let a filmmaker lets a scene breathe and lets a scene happen. Editing Women sometimes talking. Takes me out. Did Elvis get editing? Please tell me it didn't.
That would
be insane.
May have.
Would not be a good choice. I hope that did not get an editing choice. But I mean, in terms, you know, it's still a very solid film. It did.
Oh.
Wait, really?
Yeah, it got editing, production design, costume design, cinematography, actor, sound, makeup and hairstyling, and picture.
I can't get on the editing train on that one. Sorry.
All right. Well, that's our rundown of the nominees for this year. As the guys mentioned, the show is March 12th, so we will have plenty of time to discuss these nominations and the way that the awards category or the marathon is kind of shaping up. We're going to play the blend game out of order because it's related to the Oscar nominations. And this week's blend game is brought to you by AMC Theaters and specifically their AMC Best Picture Showcase. It runs from January 24th through March 12th at local AMC Theaters. And you guys can catch this year's Best Picture nominees back on the big screen, which is really, really exciting if you wanted to see Elvis again or Top Gun Maverick or even catch up with one of the smaller films that maybe you didn't get a chance to see, like Women Talking or Tar or something like that. So check the description here on the podcast for more information on that and also how you can get your tickets to their AMC Best Picture Showcase starting today. So for the blend game, we're playing hashtag 2023 Best Picture Blend. And Gabe, remind me, just for this one, we're picking right now what we
so want in a couple months when we get closer to the ceremony itself. We'll do who you think is going to win. But this today, you guys are going to cover of the nominees who you want to win or what you want to win Best right. Picture. Sure, Sean, can you remind us of the nominees that you have to choose from? And then the 10.
Yes, it is All Quiet on the Western Front. Oh, I'm on cinematography, which also got one for that. All right, here are your 10. All Quiet on the Western Front, Avatar, The Way of Water, The Banshees of Inisherin, Elvis, Everything Everywhere All at Once, The Fabelmans, Tar, Top Gun Maverick, Triangle of Sadness, and Women Talking. And of those 10, I would like to see Top Gun Maverick win Best Picture. And I'm really torn between that and Everything Everywhere All at Once. And what's great is they were my number one and number two of the year. But Top Gun Maverick was my number one, and I'm going to remain consistent. And I'm going to say I think it was the most entertaining film I saw last year. It's the one that has the most rewatchability for it. I love the story of how it really helped to get people back in theaters. I think it has a lot of great narratives going for it. And to give it Best Picture would be chef's kiss. Fantastic. Kev, where are you going?
So it's interesting. Everything Everywhere All at Once was my number two of the year. Top Gun, I think, was four or five for me on my list. It's interesting, like, because every day or every time you're diving into the award season, your thought process changes where you are. And honestly, I think a film like Top Gun Maverick winning Best Picture would do so good for the industry, just to show a big blockbuster winning. People loved it. And I love Everything Everywhere All at Once. And it's funny because I would love to see that film win because it's such an interesting, unique film. But as we get closer to the Oscars, some films that you think we're going to win or want to win, like, you start thinking differently about how other films should win. I'm just imagining, like, the world reacting to Top Gun Maverick winning Best Picture. It'd be a really cool moment. It'd be cool to see a giant blockbuster action film with Tom Cruise. He's on that stage accepting the award. I think it's going to be Everything Everywhere All at Once, and we'll get to that when we do our predictions. But right now, in my gut, just knowing how many people love Top Gun, it would just be cool to see that win. I think I'm going to choose it, even though it was lower on my top 10 than Everything Everywhere All at Once. But I think Top Gun winning is just a cool story. It's a cool story.
Let me also say, and I know this isn't factually correct, but Tom Cruise winning an Oscar for producing Top Gun Maverick would not be Tom Cruise winning an Oscar. I don't feel that would be him winning an Oscar.
Well, I mean, don't forget Michael Douglas's first Oscar was for producing
Cuckoo's Nest.
Was
it really?
Brad Pitt won an Oscar for producing 12 Years a Slave. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would push back on that, because I think the legacy of Tom Cruise in Hollywood as a filmmaker, a lot of it is going to be like how much he does as a producer to get stuff done.
I had this thought
the other day, and it was very comforting to me. I actually, like, a calm came over me. Because I realized that Tom Cruise is eventually going to reach a point in his career where he is done with stunts. Like, he just physically can't do them anymore. And he's going to transition into this, like, Paul Newman, you know, career actor stage.
Color of Money.
He's just going to, like, destroy, you know, character actor pieces for a good 10 to 20 years. Because that dude's not retiring. Like, he's going to make movies until he's in the grave. So,
yeah.
I mean, think how many amazing performances he could still have.
I think I've said this on the show. I think I said this within the last couple months. I think that's when we're going to get his best act. And I don't want him to win for Top Gun Maverick. I want him to win for the next, you know, Magnolia performance that he does.
I still think he should have been nominated for Tropic Thunder. Like, and people think I'm joking. That's a great performance. That is a wild performance.
He walked again, so that the whale could run.
Well, no, that's very different. I just think that was. I honestly did not know that was Tom Cruise till the movie ended. Like, that was how good that performance was.
Yeah. McConaughey's great in that scene, also. Yeah. Jake, of the 10.
Weirdly enough,
film to win?
Top Gun was my number one film of the year, and of the nominees, it is my favorite of them. But I think I'm going to say that I want to see Everything Everywhere All at Once win, because I feel like that's just such a weird, unique, unconventional, out of the box, traditional Best Picture winner. And what that would signal for the direction that the Academy is willing to, it's almost the antithesis of, like, a King's Speech. It would show so much growth, but Top Gun is still a little bit more, keep in mind, I don't want to, like, argue against my number one film of the year, but that is a very great traditional big screen, old school, nostalgic blockbuster sequel.
Yeah.
Like, everything it would be a big deal for Top Gun to win, because those sort of films normally don't win Best Picture. Right. But for the weird ass film that is Everything Everywhere All at Once, that includes a woman with hot dog fingers, to win Best Picture just, what, 12 years after we all complained about King's Speech winning Best, would be such a monumental shift and give me so much hope that maybe the Academy is moving in a direction where they're willing to accept less traditional, quote unquote, Oscar bait films. And which that's why I want it to win.
They authentically look surprised whenever they win something. The Daniels get up there and with all sincerity are like, why are we here? Kind of thing. Because they went out and made the movie that they wanted to make and never. They said it to us on our show. I listened to them say it and they said, guys, if we thought we were making an awards contender, we wouldn't have included a bunch of things in this movie. And it's kind of great that they did. And they're still getting the credit that they deserve for that film. So, yeah, that is great.
Remember, these are the directors who made Paul Dano ride a farting Daniel Radcliffe. and didn't one of the Daniels
and this
have
movie
that
has that same energy. They haven't shifted energies.
I would pay good money for the Oscars to at least show the Swiss Army Man sequence.
During the Critics' Choice that when Brendan Fraser was like, where were you guys for
Fury Vengeance?
I think it would be hilarious if the Daniel said, like, where were you guys when we made Paul Dano ride a farting Daniel Radcliffe across a body of water?
And that was practical. That was a practical sequence.
The audience picks for Best Picture right now was Rachel Ho. Went with All Quiet on the Western Front. Indy Christina wants Top Gun Maverick. Matt Caron, Danny Gurch, Paul Marsh, and many others went with Everything Everywhere All at Once. Jake Skelly says The Fabelmans. Ariel Pace went with Women Talking. And John Augustine says Avatar, The Way of Water. Thank you to everybody who participated in this week's game. And again, thank you to AMC Theaters for sponsoring this week's Blend Game. I want to remind everybody one more time to check the description for more information on their AMC Best Picture Showcase to see where you can catch this year's nominees on the big screen. I'm absolutely going to go back to an AMC theaters and see Top Gun. I feel Top Gun has to be seen on the big screen. Yeah, I absolutely am. I have to.
I was going
to
ask
shame
you guys
not to go appreciate that movie on the big screen.
Everything Everywhere is at 70 million domestic. Is there a world where there are enough new people interested for that to hit 100 million domestic?
No, not 30 million. No, because it's way too accessible at home.
It's worldwide is 104.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That ain't happening, brother.
That's too much ground to make up, unfortunately.
I'm trying to think of like, what if everyone, it's been long enough, everyone who saw it's like, yeah, I want to see, because me, I'm like, I want to see that one more time on the big screen.
Here's a fun one. This is what we're playing next week. You guys ready? Hashtag M. Night Shyamalan Blend.
Oh!
And have you ever done that?
By the time we do this, we could have Kevin and I will have seen his new film, and
theoretically
maybe
you will
we include
have seen
that
his new film.
I've heard some things.
Oh,
I've heard it's fucking awesome.
Oh yeah.
Oh,
it looks awesome. It's like I've heard it's incredible.
What's the last incredible?
Do you think they'll put that on the box for you, Jake? I've heard it's incredible.
I've heard it's really good.
I've liked most of his films. I'm trying to think of the last incredible movie.
Split?
Yeah, maybe Split. Split was
honestly, when it comes to his end, I mean, I know we don't want to focus on like the ending that was basically an extra credit scene, but in terms of like the surprises, next to Sixth Sense, my theater lost their shit when Bruce really Willis showed up at the end.
I know.
That's a pretty special thing that not a lot of people can pull
off. I was so glad to like have been a part. I didn't do that. Okay, Kevin, I didn't do that junket. Did you? That was in that period of time I wasn't doing junkets.
I didn't do the junket. No.
I'm curious as to how that was handled.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, could you imagine? Okay, let me ask you this. You do that junket. You see this huge mind-blowing moment. You can't talk about it, but like, does that drive you nuts that like you have Shyamalan in front of you and you can't?
Maybe you ask
him
to
we
hold
did the,
it.
We did the junket and we didn't. No, we did get him. We did get him.
Talking about us?
Yeah.
Yeah, we got him for old.
We got Anya Taylor. Yeah.
No, oh, no, no, you not mean old. Split.
We got him for Split. We did do a junket for Split and I'd have to go back and look at how we handled it.
Yeah.
I did the glass junket.
Yeah, I did glass.
Did you?
Yeah.
Hmm. Anyway. All right. We got to move on. This week in movies. If you have a subscription to Prime Video, you can see Jennifer Lopez and Josh Duhamel. And Jennifer Coolidge in a movie called Shotgun Wedding. No one here on the show has seen it, but I will mention that Corey Gisola for Cinema Blend did get a chance to see it and gave it 4 stars. So if you like Corey. He's great. You People is coming.
If you're
Netflix,
into Corey, I guess.
And the three of us have all seen it. I'm going to I'll go first and throw it around the horn. I like this. I ended up giving it 3.5. I think it is a traditional, you know, sort of meet the parents type comedy where Jonah Hill and I don't know the name of that actress, unfortunately.
Lauren London.
Name of the actress.
She was in
Lauren
ATL. London. She's great. Yeah.
Was she? Okay, yeah. I never watched ATL. They fall in love with each other and then are planning a wedding and their parents have to meet for the first time. And on one side, it's Eddie Murphy and Nia Long. And on the other side, it's Julie Louis-Dreyfus and David Duchovny. But a lot of the chemistry is in a very, you know, same way that it was Ben Stiller and Robert De Niro. It's Eddie Murphy and Jonah Hill. And I really enjoyed the two of them playing off of each other. I think Jonah Hill was extremely funny. I think Eddie Murphy was really funny. I think the bits that they came up to put them into were awkward and uncomfortable. And I thought that they milked it for what they need to get out of it. Nothing spectacular, but I got some good laughs out of it. So I ended up going out 3.5. Kev, where were you with it?
Yeah, to me, it was fun. I mean, Jake and I saw it together. I laughed a lot. It was, you know, have I thought about the movie a lot since? Not necessarily, but I mean, it was entertaining. I think 3.5 is a really good rating for it. It's on Netflix this weekend. I could see that being a fun Saturday night movie to watch. It's rated R. I believe I remember being rated R.
It's
very R rated. And you know, some of the things that the film works because there's an awkwardness to the comedy that's really kind of well done. Like there's a dinner sequence which is really, really it's a very like almost tense comedy sequence to watch. And you know, everybody, Eddie Murphy and Jonah Hill are great. I think Jonah Hill is fantastic in this. I love Lauren London. I mean, she's really, really amazing in this as well. I mean, is it groundbreaking? Is it the best comedy I've seen in years? No, but I mean, it definitely made me laugh. Like I was for 2 hours, my mind was turned off. I was enjoying an R-rated comedy. Felt like old school, kind of watching like an R-rated comedy again because we don't really get them as much.
Directed it? Did anybody of note direct
it? Was Kenya Barris? Let me double check.
Who co-wrote the film with Jonah?
Kenya Barris. I want to say it's his directorial debut, but obviously he's been involved in Blackish Grown-ish, and he's very talented. And we got a chance to talk to him for the interview as well.
Barbershop movies as well, too. One of them, at least, because I asked him about that, because Anderson shows up.
So he wrote Barbershop. Then he wrote The Next Cut. He also wrote Girls Trip. He also wrote. Okay. I'm trying to think. Oh, he was a. Never mind. Coming to America 2, he wrote Coming to America.
Yeah.
Cheaper by the Dozen. He wrote the one with Gabrielle Union and Zach Braff. But You People, I believe, is his directorial debut. And it looks like I don't know if this is accurate. Is he directing a Wizard of Oz movie? That's what I don't know if Wikipedia says. It says he's attached to Wizard of Oz.
Stories about that. I'm not sure if it's interesting or not, but he's developing it, I think.
Also want to point out go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. What?
No, I was just saying the music in the film is great, too. Great soundtrack. Great
it
score.
Is good.
Yeah, really good. Absolutely. And there's some really funny bits with the music as well. So.
Jakey, where are you?
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed it. I don't think I ever broke through that ceiling of like, oh, my God, I truly love this. Right. Like you said, it's very reminiscent of it's a little bit of Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. It's a little bit of Meet the Parents. But unfortunately, whenever you make comparisons to movies like that, you also have to add the stipulation of it's not as good as either one of those. So it's sort of one of those. I enjoyed it like for, you know, the 2 hour span that I spent with it. But if I'm going to watch a movie that reminds me of better movies, it's just sort of like, well, then why wouldn't I watch the better movies?
Yeah. And also to Jake's point, like Eddie Murphy, and again, I'm only comparing these because they were both Netflix movies, but I thought Dolomite was way funnier.
Deserving an Oscar nomination.
Now that was a great, great comedy. And again, it's just because they're both Netflix movies, but like, if you really want to see a really funny Eddie Murphy movie on Netflix, watch Dolomite. Cause it's hilarious.
Jake, stay with us and review Brandon Cronenberg's Infinity Pool. You're the only one of us that have seen it, and is it opening already? It's dropping
Friday.
Wow.
Interesting.
And this is not an Avengers meets Deadpool thing, right? This is something different.
That's unfortunate.
Well, you're spoiling the post-credit scene, but
Yeah, Kevin.
I love this movie, and which is interesting because I did not love his last film, Possessor. I just didn't do it for me. This film is the movie that the Purge films wish they had the balls to be. Basically, the premise is this American couple is on vacation in this resort in sort of this fictional sort of a country that is considered to be kind of a poorer country. And they go out with another couple and get drunk, and they're driving around and they hit and kill someone. They're arrested, taken to prison, and are told that in the country's law, if you kill someone, you're executed. Like, there's no trial. There's no you're killed. In fact, the family of the person you killed gets to kill you. That's the law. There is, however, a loophole. And the loophole is, if you have enough money, you can have a clone created of you that's an exact replica with all of your memories. It is you to a T. And that clone will be executed.
But you have to watch that clone.
You have to watch them be killed. So all the while, like, they're screaming to you. Like, this is where it gets interesting. Because then Alexander Skarsgård and his wife meet a group of Americans who continue to return to this resort and this country because they're all super rich, and they have all figured out that through this loophole, they can basically do whatever the hell they want. Because once they're arrested, they just pay the money to have the clone made, and the clone is executed. So it's basically presents in a much more interesting way than The Purge ever did. Who would you become if you didn't have consequences? And it really creates this great, fascinating social commentary. And yes, like his father's films and his own films before this, there are uber sequences of sex and violence. Though, to be fair, I don't think the violence is... Yes, there are moments where I sort of had to go, oh, man, But, like, not to the degree that I was really expecting. I was more shocked by the degree of sexuality and nudity and, like, things that I'm pretty sure I saw, but, like, it was a quick edit, so I'm not sure if I saw it or not in terms of under the umbrella of sex than I more so was in violence.
Talking about Alexander's Skarsgård?
Yeah, more than you know. So I truly love this film. Again, like, you know, and it's so fulfilling because for years I would get so frustrated watching the Purge films because I always felt like there's such an interesting social commentary here, but it's squeezed into a mediocre B horror film. And this is the film that I wanted it to be, like a great, truly great horror film that tackles that fascinating theme of, like, are we truly good people, or are we good people because there are consequences to their actions? And without those consequences, who would you be?
Interesting. All right. Well, that's going wide, and that's Brandon Cronenberg. So we're going to bring this to a close and land this lengthy episode of Real Blend, which, again, covered the Oscars, and we'll continue to talk about the Academy Awards as we lead up to the March 12th telecast. So our next premium episode, as mentioned at the beginning of the show, you can sign up for Real Blend Premium by going to the description and finding out how to sign up for that. And we're doing a mailbag. We got through some really interesting questions. We recorded this one yesterday. A lot of fun. Check the description below. Keep sending your questions in to Gabe. He will work them around and make sure that we get to them and give you some really good answers. In the meantime, follow us on social media. We are at Jake's Takes, at Kevin McCarthy TV, at Sean_O'Connell, at Gabe Kovach. And the show is at Real Blend. I'm tired, boys. This is a long one.
Same. This is a long one. Yeah.
Oppenheimer.
Yeah, yeah. Oppenheimer. Hockey pads. Larry Crown. We need something for this year.
Oppenheimer. What's this year?
Oppenheimer?
Oppenheimer, yeah. Man. Oppenheimer.
Yeah. Goodfellas.
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 Scorsese has a movie coming out.
Oh, that's right.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.